Hey, it's John from CityCast. If you're in the mood to pamper yourself a little bit this week while supporting cruelty-free products, you should check out Bon Coeur Home and Wellness. It's the best place in Portland to find everything from chic home decor to cannabis accessories. They've got a curated collection of vegan and cruelty-free home goods and wellness products because their name is French for kind heart, after all. You'll get a 20% discount on your first order when you sign up for emails this week at boncoeur.net. That's boncoeur.net and use the code BONCOEURCITYCAST20.
Today on CityCast Portland, we're talking about the Portland City Council potentially rewriting the daytime camping ban to get it through the courts and the cost breakdown of the tiny homes built for safe rest villages. Also, we dive into our mailbag and find some new contenders for Oregon's official state sandwich, and a listener comments on what they think might be one of the biggest reasons local restaurants are struggling. Joining me on this midweek roundup is our very own executive producer, John Attariani. It's Tuesday, March 12th. I'm Claudia Meza, and this is what Portland's talking about. Welcome, everyone, to the Midweek Roundup, or as I've been trying to affectionately call it, the Microdose Roundup. Today is a day we look at stories we might have missed later in the week or over the weekend. John, how's it going?
It's good. It's been real good. Yeah. How you doing, Claudia?
Not bad. I'm like looking forward to possibly a week full of sun, according to my app.
I know. Yeah.
Do you know what I can't wait to do? And this is like 100% real.
What's that?
I can't wait to clean out my gutters. I'm an old person. Every time it rains, I look at my gutters and they're just spilling out. I'm just like, oh, I can't wait. I'm going to get you.
I get it. Last fall, I rented a power washer and power washed my house. And it was like the most satisfying thing ever.
Dude.
We are now old, but these are the things we look forward to. Remember when you were cool, Claudia?
I know. But I'm like, well, actually, no. But yeah, I'm sure in comparison. Yes. All right. Well, on to the news of the midweek. So the story I was looking at was how Portland might rewrite its daytime ban on homeless camping. Something that I've been following is Shane Dixon Kavanaugh's reporting on the changes to the controversial daytime camping ban that Mayor Ted Wheeler proposed last year that he said he was still pursuing when he was on the show last week. Mm-hmm. If you, for some reason, you're just like, I'm sorry, camping ban? Well, for one, welcome to Portland, because this must be your first day here. But to catch you up, it has always been illegal to set up an unsectioned campsite in the city of Portland. So this is even before the quote-unquote camping ban, meaning there has always been a camping ban, John, which I thought in the reporting of this, a lot of local media outlets have, like, failed to state this.
I thought it was like there was a state law that was passed somewhat recently.
But the ordinance has always been there that, you know, there's always been a camping ban. It was just never strongly enforced.
It's like one of those things that, like, it's like you can't jaywalk, but nobody, like, actually enforces it.
Yes. So once the influx of people started visibly camping, like, all around, the lack of enforcement kind of caught up with the city. And like you said, one of the reasons they weren't really fully enforcing it was because, and we'll get to it. We'll get to, like, exactly why. But yes, there is a state law of sorts. So, you know, existing camping ban already there, but Mayor Wheeler and others on the Portland City Council were hoping to clarify the letter of the law. And so they came up with amendments to the existing public camping restriction policies that ban people from specifically camping on public land during daytime hours from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. It also, like, explicitly prohibited people from camping at all times near schools and public parks. So that was their amendments and what we've been calling the camping ban. Mm-hmm. So the camping ban always existed, but they're just like, hey, we can't seem to enforce this because it's too broad. And like you said, there might be a state law that will say we can't do this. But what if we're really specific? What if we say from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., you can camp afterwards? You can hang out, but you have to do it after 8 p.m. and you can't do it near schools or public parks. But those specific restrictions, which we have all been calling the camping ban, have been held up since they were announced last year because a Multnomah County Circuit Court judge issued a temporary injunction until a class action lawsuit that was brought by the Oregon Law Center on behalf of a group of Portlanders experiencing homelessness was resolved. Now, this lawsuit filed in September alleged that the city's camping restrictions, all of them, violate current Oregon law and the state constitution because they subject people who are involuntary homeless to unreasonable punishments, including potential fines and jail time, for engaging in unavoidable activities such as sleeping and staying warm and dry. That's the law you were talking about. So the city had asked the Oregon Supreme Court to require the county judge to expand on, you know, her ruling, basically. And also if, like, the ban had a sufficient likelihood of being declared unconstitutional, because basically the judge is like, we're going to hold this because this is possibly, probably unconstitutional. And so the city was like, well, let's just go to the Supreme Court. Hey, man, is this unconstitutional? And the Oregon Supreme Court was just like, ah, no comment.
So like, we don't want to deal with this. We don't want to touch this. Yeah.
Oh my God. The Supreme Court was like, my name is Paul and this is between y'all. Straight up. So now Portland city attorney is advising city council to scrap their amendments to the existing camping ban. And here's his quote, replace it with something we believe may be more likely to survive a legal challenge. So those proposed changes haven't been shared with the public as of today because they're probably still getting worked out because this literally happened like last Thursday. Mm-hmm. But basically, they have to get through these past rulings from federal judges in the Ninth Courts, which covers Oregon, that asserts that cities can't cite people for sleeping or existing on all public property if there are not enough shelter beds to accommodate them all. That is like the threshold right there. So we're stuck once again looking like to shelter that doesn't exist for our way out of this, you know, issue.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. And what this all kind of helped me sort out was like, I feel like our local media has been covering the houseless issue in a very clickbaity way, us included. Like there's something about this where I was just like, this has been more nuanced than I feel like people have given it thought to. I don't know.
Yeah, this is a really complicated thing. And like one of the things that sort of is shaking my brain is in some of these the legal back and forth, there's been this discussion of how cities are allowed to enact objectively reasonable restrictions on time, place, and manner of outside camps, which is like the idea that there is an objective frame to look at this issue through just like doesn't exist. I think that this is inherently a completely subjective issue and like trying to come up with a set of rules that abide by some quote unquote objective criteria seems almost impossible.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I mean, I think it's one of the reasons why the Oregon Supreme Court was just like, oh, I'm sorry. We're not here right now. But I mean, something needs to happen, John, because, and let me just give you like some direct reporting. There has been a man who's been camping in front of, you know how there's a church right behind where I live? I don't know if you remember that. It's like the Red Sea Church or something.
Totally, yeah.
He's been camping right in front of the Red Sea Church for like over a month. And when it was really, really cold, you know, I remember it dropped. It was almost like freezing temperatures, like out of nowhere, like a week ago. And he started a bonfire on the sidewalk. On the sidewalk, John. So no one could go. And he was clearly on something because he was barely clothed. And he was doing like, you know, when a bear tries to assert their territory, so they kind of do these like fake rushes at you. He was doing that to everyone. We live by a park, so there were kids that were trying to get to the park. It was just like, I have a lot of empathy for people living on the streets. The homelessness that we're seeing and that we're experiencing, it's different. There's a lot of mental health issues as well. And I think when people are just like, oh, do something, it's that. It's like you see people that are like clearly, you know, losing their minds on whatever drug they're on or just have always like had issues. And we're just watching. It just feels so dystopian, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like that something needs to happen there. I don't know if it's like this ordinance or whatever, but like, not, you know, and of course I've called like Portland Street Response, no clue what happened. I was just like, dude, I'm afraid this guy's going to freeze to death. Also, he might hurt somebody. Like, he's acting very irrational.
I don't think anybody is arguing like, this is great, you know, like, this is not great.
Yeah, but I just feel like we talk abstractly sometimes about like, oh man, can't do anything. But I'm like, this is what's happening out in the streets, like literally my street. So I'm just like, I'm getting to my wit's end, you know, with hemming and hawing and figuring out what we're going to do.
Well, I mean, you know, from my reading is like, okay, the main thing that is prohibiting the city from enacting this camping ban or any sort of ban on camping in public places is the capacity for shelter. I mean, that's what the state law is, right? Is that cities can't prevent people from being in public places if there aren't enough shelter beds. And there's not enough shelter beds, you know? And
but
so, like,
this
is. It's
not just shelter beds, John. It's what I'm saying. It's like mental health issues. You can't force someone to go into a shelter if they're having mental health issues and they're paranoid and they don't want to go there.
But you can't broadly prohibit people from being in public places if there isn't somewhere for them to go either, right? Like, this is the sort of paradox that the city is stuck in. That's why I'm saying there's no objectively reasonable standard here. Like, you're totally correct. Major mental health crises on our street is, like, a bad thing. But at the same time, if there isn't enough places that the community can allow these people to be in, then it's also, like, really difficult and, you know, to my mind, potentially unethical to make it illegal for them to be there, right? So, like, it is subtle and it's really complicated the way these issues are woven together.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess to my point is that it's not about places to be. It's about resources. To me, this is larger than just homelessness. To me, I'm just like, this is like mental health and drug addiction. So we could have all the shelters in the world, but what we need is like outpatient services. Like, we need to be able to put people on hold so they don't hurt themselves. And so they're not also hurting other people. And that is something that, like, I don't think we're looking that deep into. And that's what I'm talking about. We should be able to put people on hold when they're like harming themselves. Dude, I was at Mama Bird and this dude, again, no shirt, about to take his pants off, like, pushed so hard that this woman hit her head on the floor. And all these dudes had to come and grab him and put him on the floor and, like, hold him. Do you see what I'm saying? That man doesn't need a shelter. That man needs to be put on a psychiatric hold at that point because he's, like, out there hurting people. And the cops finally came. Who knows what they did? It's just, like, there needs to be something else, and we don't have that something else.
I think I agree with you. It's just, like, you know, governments have certain tools that they can use. And, like, you know, it can address housing. It can, like, address mental health crises. And, like, yes, all of these things need to happen. All of these things need to, like, be happening at the same time and funded at the same time.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, I'm glad that I get to sit here and complain about it on a podcast instead of being the person who's in charge of trying to fix it or have answers.
Like, one thing that has happened to me, John, over this year and a half of us doing this podcast is I've become so sympathetic to our city leaders. And that's something that I never thought would happen.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? And a lot of it is, again, because the way things are covered, it's very like us versus them. Mm-hmm. And I understand that we as the press are here to hold the powers that be accountable, but that's not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking more about how we have chosen to cover issues. We're just waiting for them to not do something we're expecting them to do. And I just feel like that's also part of the problem. And that's something that I've been like wrestling with. And this story kind of shook that for me because we spoke to Mayor Wheeler about this.
Yeah.
And just hearing his like very human reaction to like, dude, we've been trying. And then just understanding, like going back, reading the law, being like, no, man, like this is way more complicated than like, oh, these ding dongs, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
Anyhow, John, what's your story? And also, John, I love when we discuss this. Like sometimes when I'm like going on my little soapbox, I'm just like, John, don't worry. You don't have to solve it. I understand that we need someone else again, like someone else. But I'm like, John, don't worry. You don't have to solve it tonight.
I think that is sort of like where my brain goes is like, what's the structural question? Like, how does this all fit together? And like, what does it take? You know?
Like yeah, that. You're just going to give yourself a headache.
I am going to give myself a headache regardless. Speaking of how to solve it, though, I mean, like I said, for this particular vexing problem of like, there's a lot of people on the streets, they don't have somewhere to go. Like the clearest road out of that is more housing, right? And the thing that I was looking into was some reporting from K2 that Shelby Slaughter did, looking at the new tiny home pods that are being built around the city.
Oh, cool.
So Multnomah Safe Rest Village, it had originally had a capacity for about 30 people when it opened in 2022. They just purchased 100 new tiny home pods for this area. So like basically tripling the capacity of like where people can go And the thing that was really interesting in this article was she sort of got into like what these things are and like how the city came around the decision of what they're going to be, right? Of like what mm-hmm. these pods are going to look like, of how much they cost, which is something that I hadn't seen a lot of reporting on. They all cost $16,500. It's a total contract of about $2.2 million. And the article sort of gets into like the different options that the city considered for what these shelters are going to be. It pointed out that like there's a Washington company that makes these things for as cheap as $7,000, whereas like there's some versions of these little pods that are like more than $30,000 a piece. And the city sort of went right in down the middle, went for a version that is, you know, around 15 grand out of the box, no pun intended. And then there's like add-on and shipping costs as well. One of the things that I thought was cute was that it said that some of them are going to allow space for couples. We think about these pods as like a place to put people, you know, the way we talk about people as being like a public nuisance, you know, as being like a problem, as being like something we want to get out of our public spaces. But then the other side of it, of like thinking of a couple sort of sharing one of these pods together, was just such a humanizing mental image that I think sometimes you're right, when we talk about these in like policy discussions, we do sort of forget that these are real people who like have real relationships. And like sometimes it's a couple who like just wants a little pod for themselves to be, you know, out of like the cold and the rain as well. This site is going to be tripling in size with these pods. And this is just like one step in like a very long and slow but important process.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if the Multnomah Village did Alchemy go in? Because I remember Mayor Wheeler discussing how Urban Alchemy, which is that company from California and essentially provides a ton of services, how they, you know, the city's
partner. Yes, it's not managed by Urban Alchemy. It's managed by a separate nonprofit.
Okay, but it's doing the same thing, like trying to connect people to services, because the whole point is that they graduate from this village to permanent housing, correct?
Yeah, that there are like outreach workers that are involved helping people get connected with services and things like that.
Yeah. I was looking at the numbers in Safe Rest. The Safe Rest villages have been working. Like it has mm-hmm. been connecting people to successfully to not only services, but like housing, which is awesome. You know, and I just feel like we should celebrate our wins. Like this is working, you guys. Like I know it feels like we're drowning, but it's working. Things are changing. Maybe not fast enough, but like, yeah.
I mean, it's so interesting to think about like the scale of the problem and the scale of the solutions, right? Because like, you know, in this, we're talking about that adding capacity for like 60 people, you know. I feel like I've heard the number 6,000 as being the number of unhoused people in Portland right now, you know. So like 60 feels like a drop in the bucket. You turn that around, though, like we just created housing for 60 people who didn't have them. Like it is such a huge problem that I think we often look at it through the wrong light of like this is such a big problem, as opposed to thinking about like the scale of solutions that are being found is like also pretty big as well. Like this is going to change people's lives, and that's something to celebrate.
Yeah. Well, John, thank you. It makes me excited for all the rest, because I know there's going to be some more sites going up. And just so you know, listener, it's really confusing because there's Safe Rest villages. There's a ton of other villages that are not at all related to Safe Rest. Mm-hmm. And then there's the temporary campsites that Wheeler has been talking about. So it's just like, and they're all different. They're all managed. They're all different people. It's just, I don't know. It's confusing to keep track of everything.
We're here to be confused for you. We're here to be confused on your behalf.
Listener. Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to open up our mailbag.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Okay, so John, do you remember on the last Friday roundup, we were talking to Malia about the closing of Bar Norman, natural wine shop in Southeast that had been around for about 6 years, and it was much loved, had a really strong community, still closing because of just not being able to survive, you know?
I feel like at one point we promised each other to go to Bar Norman together on like some episode, maybe a year ago. We're like, we're going to go to Bar Norman sometime. And we might have missed our window, Claudia.
No, it's open till April 6th, so we can still go.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it turns out I'm allergic to...
Oh my God. Yeah, you're not allergic to wine, John. Okay, so this is Ramon's response to that conversation. He wrote, I just wanted to send some quick feedback about the restaurant conversation, which started with your mentioning Bar Norman's closure. I was just really disappointed that you didn't mention the expense that comes with eating out since the end of the pandemic. I want to support local restaurants, but I don't get away from a decent place with a bill under $80 for my family of three, and that's just not feasible anymore. Even Lucky Lab, a laid-back casual beer hall, charges almost $7 a pint, and I'm not blaming them. Things are just expensive all over now, and that's just what it costs, but my wages haven't matched that increase, and that's where I'm going to cut back first. Dining out is now a treat when it used to be an every other night thing for us. And Ramon, that is really like, yeah, you're right. I don't think that people can afford to go as much as they used to. We're in a sort of recession, you know?
Yeah, it's expensive for sure.
For sure, yeah. I was actually just like, I'm sorry, a family of three and like $80, like to me, that's low. So steal.
Yeah, that's still pretty, that's pretty thrifty.
If I go out with one other person, if we hit 80, I'm just like, oh, that was cheap, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Geez Louise, I can only imagine, yeah. But yeah, thank you, Ramon, for writing in. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
A major point in as to why some restaurants are struggling is that they're just not getting the patronage that they were used to, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of dining, you remember our conversation about sandwiches from the other week, Claudia?
Oh, yeah. How Oregon doesn't have a state sandwich. How we couldn't figure out a state sandwich for Oregon. Yes.
So, yeah. On a previous episode, we were talking about what the state sandwich for Oregon should be. And I, off the top of my head, proposed like a grilled cheese, which like in the like split second that I thought about it, seemed made sense. Now, on reflection, I'm like, what? No, it's not a grilled cheese.
That and tomato soup. Sense. You also said tomato soup.
And tomato soup, a grilled cheese and tomato soup. I think that was just what I had a craving for at that moment. And that's why I was like, this should be our state sandwich.
Oh my God, that's the official sandwich of five-year-olds. But yeah.
Well, we heard from some listeners who had better ideas than I did with my dumb grilled cheese sandwich. This idea is from Monica. And Monica's idea is the Marigot. So for the Oregon sandwich, Monica's proposing open-faced, toasted artisanal bread with goat cheese and marionberry jam, plus arugula sprinkled on top. Which, like, sounds like a cheese sandwich.
That sounds really good. I mean, I didn't see grilled in it, but yeah.
Sounds like a cheese sandwich.
I don't know, man. Sounds like a grilled cheese sandwich
but
to
me. But a much more thoughtful cheese sandwich than the one that I proposed.
Yeah, marionberry jam and goat cheese is actually like, I want to try that. That sounds good. Have you had jam with cheese in a sandwich, John? It's so good.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Have you eaten cheese? Have you ever had a cheese sandwich, man?
Yeah. John, with jam, though. Shut
jam.
Up, John.
Yeah.
It's different. But so everyone's favorite, Brian of Montevilla, also had this to say.
Hey, this is Brian in Montevilla. Listening to Tuesday's episode where you had the question about what would Oregon sandwich be, it's tough. We're a state that has so much bountiful produce, so much bountiful cheese, so I totally get John's argument for the grilled cheese. I totally get that listener's argument for some sort of seafood thing, but for my money, it would have to be a banh mi, and hear me out on this. We have some of the best French bread that you will find in America, hands down. We have some of the best Vietnamese food in all of America, hands down. And the banh mi's in Portland go beyond just the traditional. They often mix in unique local ingredients and unique flavors, and it's just like the quintessential, affordable, delicious flavor bomb of a sandwich that isn't soggy, that isn't greasy. It's just delightful in every way. So that would be my vote for the Oregon sandwich.
Banh mi for Oregon sandwich. What do you think, Claudia?
I mean, I love the banh mi. That's one of my favorite sandwiches. So, yeah,
I love banh mi too. Yeah.
I feel like it's Oregon though, you know, and like there should be a gluten-free option. That's all I'm saying. Should be a vegan.
There should be a gluten-free option.
I just feel like there should be a vegan gluten-free option. If we're going to have a steak sandwich, it has to be like, and you know what I'm saying? Like easily converted.
I also think that there's something particularly Oregon about us like claiming another culture's sandwich as our steak sandwich. Of being like, we'll take that. Yeah, that's ours.
I might like it. Oh my God. We're like, the burrito, that is our steak sandwich.
A little bit on the nose, Oregon. I feel like, yeah. Banh mi, it's an Oregon banh mi.
Well, does anyone have an idea for a steak sandwich? It has to be able to quickly become gluten-free and vegan, I think. I mean, it is Oregon, but when I think of Portland, like, it has to be nimble enough to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bread. What if it's just bread?
And bonus points if we're not stealing it from another culture.
Well, thank you so much, John, for hanging out. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be covering more headlines of the week this Friday on our Friday Roundup. So we'll see you then.
Yeah. Thanks, Claudia.
Well, that's all for today here on CityCast Portland. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more from around the city. Until then, see you at Slim's.